This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Eligible for welfare benefits as well, but a month are receiving any kind of cash aid who are eligible to work, able to work years ago before welfare reform.
This notion that's implicit in the argument should be working, which sounds a little strange given the
Given the job situation in the country and given the fact that the whole purpose of disability is work. But then again, you know, the purpose of welfare was because they couldn't find jobs, because they were originally because they were taking care of kids. But, you know, what we've seen in the last really 20, 25 years is this sort of think tanks and groups like that to say the government is giving just because they're poor. And that's not going to solve anything. So, you know, Anderson start making sure that only the deserving poor can get it, and people meaning pretty much nobody.
Well, finally, there was pushback stories. At times, Ombud Margaret Sullivan even talked about parents coaching their kids not to read without actually talking that as a problem. Did you see, though, the kind of rethink media have really figured out why they got it?
No, not yet. I mean, it's not like there has been a spate of good report. The reaction came pointing out that the Kristoff and NPR and other thing, it's gone the other way. You know, you've seen columnists and people like Joe Klein coming, disability is a huge scam. And it's almost like it's a meme now that it's entered the discussion. And the fact that it's all baited doesn't matter.
We've been speaking with author and journalist Neil DeMoss. Hit for charges of cheating appears in the June issue of Fares Magazine. X joining us today on Counterspin.
Always glad to be here.
And that's it for produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. Magazine called Extra. You can find subscription information on our website. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. With me is Steve Rendell. I'm Jenny Counterspin.
At KBOO.fm, you can listen to pro-web-only programs. On the homepage, under the tab Interview with the Manhattan Transfer, a 1983 speech by Critical Women, an interview about the Merry Meet Gathering, and more under Latest Audio. Thanks for listening. Dance companies are celebrating the 100th anniversary of Igor Stravinsky's masterpiece. Here in Portland, new choreography to Stravinsky's score will be Peshka Lashka Dancers in collaboration with the PSU or Ken Selden. The performance of The Rite of Spring at 8 p.m. at Lincoln Hall on the Portland State University. About this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at KBOO.com page under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible by members and a grant from True West, presenting Singer Concert with Max Gomez, 8 p.m. Thursday, June 20th. Tickets for Patty Griffin at the Crystal Ballroom available. You are listening to KBOO FM 90.7. Stay tuned for Bread and Roses.
Marching, hey. All the darkened kitchen's gray. All touched by the radiance discloses. Oh, Bread and Roses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, here with
Leela Pruitt,
your host tonight for Genocide, Government Secrets, Human Rights, and Guatemala and the Case Tater. We're going to be talking tonight to and about a nonprofit called the National Security Archives, not to be confused with the NSA, has been caught spying on all of us. The National Security Archive, uncovering secrets that have put dictators, will be speaking with the director of the National Security Archives. Comment on our topic tonight, please do so during the show, 8187. Again, the topic, government secrets, great people who are working for justice.
And just a little background on at least a couple of the stories involving the National Security Director of the Guatemala Project within that archive, Kate Doyle, who will be our guest in LA Times, June 6th. When a Guatemalan court found the country's Efrain Rios Montt guilty of genocide last month, a leader had been convicted of such a crime in his own country. The verdict Guatemala's fragile courts, but also for Latin America generally, where leaders have all too often failed to bring human rights abusers to justice, is now at risk. Just days after Rios Montt was convicted, it was thrown out on a procedural technicality by the country's constitutional lower court to rehear all evidence presented after April 19th when the... Going back 2 months in time would be hard enough, but a hurdle. Today, the High Court will consider whether the former dictator or whether he should be shielded from prosecution under a 1986 amnesty. Montt seized power in 1982 in a military coup. Months with the support of the United States. During that, widely considered one of the most brutal chapters in the country's 36-year, sending troops into the Mayan Highlands where they raped, tortured, and killed children accused of colluding with the rebels. Among the worst of Ceres were more than 200 civilians were killed and their bodies. Obviously, Rios Montt's defense attorneys have a right to demand us under law. Unfortunately, the Constitutional Court's role in the case is neither the ex-dictator's rights nor those of victims. Instead, by trial, it has essentially cast the case into limbo. They already had issued a verdict and recused themselves from any further proceedings, unsure how to proceed. And there are serious questions about whether they stepped forward to testify against Rios Montt in the first run-through of the trial in the event of a do-over. That's a little background on Efrén Rios Montt in Guatemala, former Guatemalan dictator, first of state to be tried on such charges, and who was returned. One more story just to give you an idea of what's going on with Guatemala. Ex-Guatemalan president was extradited to the U.S. in a corruption case. So Guatemalan officials rousted an imprisoned former president to New York to face long-pending corruption charges. The extraditionee, who had been fighting being sent to the U.S. for 2 years, caught much of him amid complaints about the country's willingness to attack impunity. Mr. Portillo, who was president from 2000 to 2004 in New York, of conspiring to launder some $70 million of his country's, as police officers put him on a plane swarmed by the kidnapped and predicted he would be back when the case fell apart. Mexico as a financial advisor until he was extradited embezzlement charges. And then in 2010, the U.S. filed its own charges, Peter called converting the office of the Guatemalan presidency into his. So with that, we're going to go to a bit of music, and then we're going to director of the Guatemala Project at the National Security Archive and its project.
Land to roam and cultivate, reciprocate, trade, and to respect the Indian way. I will no longer cry like a memory that floats in the air. The song of an eagle climbing in the wind on a hot summer day. As seen as they were crying sadly, seeing turbulent skies above me. Butterfly in a mask and a costume, in a jungle of leaders to blame. Man, will it always be just the same? Seeing boys cross to wash a dish, seeing money disguised as the answer. Saw a mother smile so hopeful, seeing a man who treasured able to choose. Found the strength that I need to survive. But today what's your karma? Today the things you say when you give and you take. Nothing but the truth in the name of aging. Is it only you? Are we only living for today? Make will be my day before it's over. Maybe today will be my...
Tonight we are featuring Genocide Declassified and Doyle. She's a senior analyst of U.S. policy in Latin America. She directs several major research projects, including the Guatemala Project, U.S. and Guatemalan government documents on the country's shared history, and the Evidence Project, connecting the right to truth and access to injustice struggles in Latin America. Since 1992, Doyle writes groups, truth commissions, prosecutors, and judges to archives that shed light on state violence. She has testified in human rights legal proceedings, including the 2008 trial of Peru for his role in overseeing military death squads, and side trial of former Guatemalan dictator Efrén Rios Montt. Kate, I just want to encourage you all to call in with any questions or comments you have. 818-1-8187. Kate Doyle, welcome. Well, thank you for coming. We know that you've been incredibly busy. We've been trying to get to Guatemala several times, I know.
That's true.
So you're a forensic archivist.
Well, I've been called that. That is a term that my work in trying to mine some of the secret archives and analyzing the documents that we find state repression, the role of the military, and bringing those documents into a courtroom setting, working with separate declassified documents as evidence in criminal human rights. I've been in Guatemala, but in a case court, in cases in Mexico and El Salvador and Peru, simply a phrase that has been used to describe the work of some of the secret documentation that we know exists, but that normally the public and helping human rights activists affected and prosecutors and judges use them in human rights investigations around.
But our listeners are clear, the National Security Archive sounds like a federal government, say, and what you've pretty much said what its mission is, but can you clarify?
It has kind of a sinister name, doesn't it? It was founded in 1980, and researchers specifically to serve the right to truth, the right to information, and our focus has always been of issues that come up in U.S. policy, national security. So we try to use the Freedom of Information Act, our own law here in the United States, to obtain the declassification of documents, international policy or national security, and make that information known to the public. Rights. We work on issues that touch on nuclear policy or U.S. policy on the Cold War in East Europe, you know, projects like that.
And do your universally involve U.S. government secret documents or others?
In the past, but as the Cold War ended, we worked closely with some of our international partners around the world. In fact, in places like Hungary or the former East Germany, places of democratic transition, and trying to figure out how do they give citizens to know what their government was doing, secret police files and intelligence files in some of these security states been compiled over the decades, but had never been able to get their hands on. As people from partners in those countries began to talk to their own freedom of information laws, how could they create public archives? We began to work more closely with them and even work on in their own countries. So one of the things that has happened in Guatemala to obtain a small number of Guatemalan military agency campaign there, the 36-year conflict of police files. So we've also when working not only with U.S. documents.
And this is Carol. I'm a co-host of the program. We're speaking with senior analyst Kate Doyle tonight. So your work, it's like old-time investigative journalism in a sense.
I have to do an extensive amount of research and sometimes even interview all the secondary sources, looking at whatever primary sources are already available, just to identify who are to the extent we can so that we can then file dozens of FOIA requests to try to get the documents through that research the government has generated over time. So, for example, if we're looking at regarding U.S. relations with Peru under Fujimori, what kind of relations the U.S. had with Fujimori since we gave? Did we have an intelligence program in Peru? What role does that? The research about that will help guide us into in what way did the government create paper, essentially, create information that years later could help human rights investigators and prosecutors' role in overseeing some of the military death squads that were set up then. We know so that the guerrilla force in Peru, but also hundreds and hundreds by the Fujimori government to be allied with Sendero, or who was simply irritants. Declassified government, U.S. documents have been very, very useful for those kinds of cases.
In the film Granito, How to Nail a Dictator, for your work in bringing to trial for genocide in Guatemala, I guess first in the Spanish. And it seemed to me that Granito infers that nation in Guatemala.
That's true. National Security Archives work with the Truth Commission that had been created by the Peace Accord in 1996 after the conflict ended. The truth and to look into the historical causes of the conflict and obtain declassified documents for the Truth Commission investigators, although we knew in any way connected to the judicial process. That was something the government was doing in the mandate of the commission. But I think that our work with the commission to documents that talked about all kinds of aspects of the conflict, it talked about how it created, how it was built up in the 1960s and 70s, how it became this sort of 1960s with extensive U.S. military support, intelligence support. As the Truth Commission did its work, I think the organization that supported that right to information public. And so as a result, it's true, I've approached by Guatemalans who had access to secret public. The government had, in fact, stonewalled even the Truth Commission on obtaining, and some of them were released to us or leaked to us, and those documents turned over to prosecutors and judges in a couple of cases.
I was really impressed in your presentation of the Granito that you avoided a wholesale and seemed to be very impartial in the way that you evaluate your evidence. Is that fine?
I hope so. I mean, thank you for saying. I think, you know, for us, the key issue is to hidden histories about our own country and about the countries that the U.S. has come infected, pressured, and the information that our own embassies have A officers, our own defense attachés. This is an analysis created by officials of the United States government, a special power, not only in terms of our own past, but it has had a very special power as evidence in the court. We know that when an ambassador writes about a meeting with the head of state 3 decades ago and talks about that the president expressed or talked about in that meeting that were secret over them in a courtroom 30 years later, that the judges understand writing in that way in a totally official capacity in a secret Washington for the State Department to read and was never intended for that, I think, adds to the power of the document as evidence when it ultimately.
And we're speaking with Kate Doyle, Government Secret Declassified. If you'd like to call in, it's 503-237, and I believe we have LJ on the line. Again, 503-2. LJ, go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Good. Thank you for. I'm going to refer the listening audience to the 17th edition of The Nation, and it's a one trial. Okay. Now, the numbers given by The Nation are 29,000 disappeared. There was a scorched earth. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Region. Of Guatemala,
Ishil region, yep.
That's where the Mayan people are. And it started out as a counterinsurgent, but reading the article in The Nation, just sent to believe the brutality that they possibly they followed them, the government forces followed them into this, almost unbelievable to me. All right. Now, can we administration's role in this genocide, in this massacre? Can we talk about Elliot Abrams' role in this?
And thank you, LJ. And you. The Nation actually, you know, a lot of the information, thanks to the National Security Archive. So, Kate, do you have any comments?
I wrote that article, so.
a lot of contribution.
I really appreciate it, and I hope that listeners who are interested in reading more about the counter-terrible years in Guatemala, but also on The Nation's website. LJ, you asked about the role of named Elliot Abrams. Well, the Reagan administration was in Rios Montt, that the dictator who was finally brought to trial a couple of months. The reason is that the United States at that time, in March of 1982, Reagan was in office for just, as you remember, the government was very secret war in Central America against the Sandinista government in Nicaragua, and in support from the other countries in the world. It had El Salvador on board, and it very, very much wanted with the Contra war, not only for public relations purposes, was funneling weapons, training, and money to the Contra from the other countries in the region for that project. So Reagan, they tried over and over again to restart, been stopped in the 1970s for human rights reasons when Carter came into office. They never managed to convince the U.S. Congress to legally fund the Guatemalan military again. But the CIA did put dollars to the Guatemalan military throughout the period in which forced by Congress. So we were secretly funding the Guatemalan army at the time. Very much a creation, an institution that had been built up by the 60s and 70s with with tens of millions of dollars of assistance and on the ground in the early years of the conflict. So we very much have responsibility for what happened during the genocide for those various reasons. At the time...
Hello?
Yes, we're fine.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Was the head of Guatemala, was the assistant secretary in the humanitarian affairs. And yet, instead of going before the Rios Montt dictatorship and calling out the brutality of slaughtering thousands of civilians, most of them Mayans, as Elliot Abrams was instead going before Congress and doing administration to tell Congress how great Rios Montt was, what a reformer he was, under him, and working to sell to Congress the reg on military aid. So, you know, Elliot Abrams played a very sinister role.
And, you know, from what you're saying now, I'm just recalling Granny of claiming that the United States perpetrated the genocide movie, that it was that sort of military region. However, we do bear significant responsibility. Could you clarify?
The wars, as they get fought on the ground, are often, you know, they are wars that are those cultures, those histories, and the special nature of, you see, the profound brutality of it, the way to house, the way they gathered their own people up, and women and children, raped the women and the girls, and then killed secretly or threw them down wells or down ravines. I mean, these are things that you will never find a doctrinal manual. You will never find evidence of the ground during the genocide directing this. So what I was trying to say, and I think the United States bears this special responsibility for the genocide because of the way we held what became this killing machine. The ground, you know, the Guatemalans have to reckon with that themselves. And I think that's one of trial was so important. This trial was not a trial of Elliot Abrams. He will be called out by his own citizens someday. But this trial was specifically the Guatemalan dictator who ordered these operations, knew what was happening and unfolding in the field, knew that thousands of civilians adopted it. And I think all Guatemalans are grateful for having had the chance to have heard them from the survivors and to have had to confront in this very visceral way through the trial, which was broadcast live every day, of those terrible events.
Kate Doyle of the National Security Call in. It's 503-231-8187. And go ahead.
Yeah, Kate, I'm glad you mentioned Elliot Abrams and gave us that. Why the CIA was allowed to harass and put mental torture. He died here, I think, 2 years ago in Cuba. It was the only country. But why wasn't that stopped?
Questions are a little bit outside of my field of knowledge. I know all about Philip Abrams. I've read his books. I don't know much about CIA's relationship with him and pressure on him, and for what I've read and heard Philip. I mean, I heard Philip speak several times. I think the CIA considered Philip A.G. a traitor and acted on that.
I very much in pointing out some of these atrocities, too. It's the very reason he came out and wrote those books, which was as a member of the CIA, but he just couldn't take it anymore, is what he said, and mentally tortured him for a long time afterwards. So, you know, tells them, hey, wait a minute here. You know, this guy did a good thing. Back off.
And, you know, notoriously rigorous about cracking down on, but and then speaks out in an uncontrolled, people who are employees of the CIA are made to sign that they will never reveal information about the CIA, and the CIA reacts.
Yeah, thank you, Kate. And thank you, Rick, for calling in. And listeners, you're tuned to Bread and Roses. If you'd like to, 231-8187. Kate, thank you again for spending Friday evening. I just can't get over it. I mean, you've spent years and years looking into what secrets, declassifying genocide, and some of the worst atrocities human beings have perpetrated against you when you thought, I can't do this anymore.
Carl, because, you know, one of the aspects of this work, as anybody who works in human rights, coming into contact with, working with, collaborating with cities, And that's just a powerful experience because you really see what courage is and never really consider stopping working with people who have been waiting. Like that word, it sounds passive, but fighting, really fighting for the communities that were affected by the genocide that was at stake in this case, fighting for justice. And when I say fighting for justice, I mean they have pointed out to the forensic archaeologists and clandestine burial sites of the military were information that they've been, it's waiting for the moment when they can tell someone and they can see the bodies for the first time in 25, 30 years. Over and over again to human rights reporters, to the church, to the Truth Commission, and now before a courtroom. I heard you say that, you know, the Ishio survivors and the witnesses who spoke in the first side of Rios Montt will come again and speak again if this terrible constitutional court ruling. Well, I can tell you right now, they will come twice. They will come three times. They will come 10 times. They will say it as many times as they have to.
And she is a senior analyst of the National Security Archive, not to be confused, two quite different entities.
And connection, we're going to retry that. When she comes back, the award she recently won for human rights activism, the Alba Puffin Foundation, about how she feels about her countrymen, her fellow U.S. citizens, blissful ignorance of much of what has gone on in Guatemala and their trial of Efren Rios Montt.
Voy a llorar por ti, oh, perdón. No, no voy, que mi corazón no muere, no ha muerto, no ha muerto.
Tra tierra o vislumbres de cada guerra, donde los dientes niños de mezcal. Que lo malo se va a acabar. Ya no quiero llorar de pena, solo quiero cantar a su santar. Que el cielo me quiere cantar. Platicaba la espuma al mar. Y en los ojos que estabas a cerrar, y en el viento que se crecía. Y una guerra a tapar con su manto. Unas calles con hombres que de la selva, donde fueron las cosas buenas. Yo tengo la culpa de una mirada. Yo te busco como testigo lanza. Yo te busco por el bordado de mujeres y eso que causa preguntas. El tejido de servilletas. Te busqué en la calle, te busqué en el diario, la televisión, en las voces. Justicia. Te busqué en las caras, mentes. Te busqué en los ojos de nuestras ciudades.
We are here tonight with Kate Doyle of the National Security, featured in the award-winning documentary film Granito, How to Work in Bringing a Guatemalan Dictator Efren Rios Montt to... Kate, are you back?
I hope so.
I wanted to ask of meeting and engaging with people that have been so... it is just overpowering. What does that make you feel in the U.S.?
Well, I live in the United States of amnesia, so it's not surprising. Not surprising. We don't really understand.
And again, we're speaking with Kate Doyle. She's with the National Security Archive. Having a little, some technical issues with the phones tonight, but at 503-231-8187.
So, Kate, continue.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I have... high school textbooks. I'm always curious about that in the U.S. You know, there's a rough account of what happened in the United States overthrew the democratically elected president of Guatemala, Jacobo Arbenz. I believe set off really this sort of spiral of violence that came in the 90s when the peace accords were finally signed. And so there's a sense, but there's really no deep sense of how intervention as a country impacts people's human lives. And that's moving and amazing about the genocide trial, because you had 94 who had actually been right there when the massacre was unfolding, and they were to escape, or they fled their villages before the military killing where they happened to be in a field, you know, tending to their crops, and when the massacre, people who lived this, these are people who suffered this and lost their families, and detailed, deep, meaningful stories about their, the human dimension of the impact of U.S. policy, rare citizens, sadly.
And why do you think that is?
I don't think I know how to speak about that. I don't think we know how to take responsibility for that. This has nothing to do with sort of the age of the Internet or the age of television. I mean, I think this is something, a disconnect and a callousness in terms of the way on other societies and other lives, our impact in places like Haiti or Mexico, or the understanding that our policies, whether they are military, these policies have real impact. There's very little understanding of that here.
Yeah, and certainly not much of the United States as the, well, that we are the superpower. There's a misunderstanding that we're the moral superpower. Again, where, you know, your work is so important with the National Center. It gives a real deeper history and view of action.
I hope so. I think we do that in partnership with our colleagues from these countries. So that I've loved about this work is, you mentioned in that you wanted to talk about this Puffin Award for human rights activism, and not just to me, but to someone in Guatemala named Freddy Petrarelli, who runs a foundation in Guatemala. And their responsibility in Guatemala is documents. And the forensic anthropologists dig up the bones. And these are forensic evidence on the one hand, but also pieces of these people's lives, the histories of communities dated by this conflict, by the scorched earth operation. One of the very rewarding and powerful, only to be able to go into the archives and find the secret documents, that's always concert with my colleagues in Guatemala to try to tell it.
Yeah, it's as Lila has said previously, it's human rights and the right to information. It's very interesting.
I mean, that is kind of the core focus of this new project, that archive. It's trying to get the human rights community, but all over, to recognize the know and the right to truth to fundamental human rights of people, so that the claims to protect and respect the human can't sit on decades worth of secret government archives that contain information in own institutions in state terror or state repression. That's something that you see, and in this country as well, obviously in the Americas, I should say, where you have records and don't make them available to, never mind the prosecutors and the judges, that have been assigned by the same government to investigate what this project is about. It's trying to include in the sort of panorama of fundamental human rights that we need to fight for.
I'm very hopeful that will bring the U.S. citizens that human rights are not just march, that people's lives are at stake every day and forward at the risk of their lives. They're waiting for television coverage. Another thing, feedback on is we recently traveled to Guatemala, and myself for the went through many of the indigenous regions, and they seemed like very cool people and very catering to tourists coming to the village plaza and suddenly see murals of the. It's a reminder that's always there. They don't speak openly. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Of one kind or another, whether it be the murals, building monuments, grave sites, whether or not you have bodies with names, part of the process of recovery after the war ended. So in some ways, it's not a substitute for justice by any means. In some ways, it's what communities can do. So if you're waiting for the return of the remains of your or who was killed secretly somewhere, things that you can do as a community and as a family and as an individual, remember. And that is something that in Latin America, that's finding ritualistic ways to acknowledge what has been a secret history, a history that nobody did. That's why I think in so many of the communities you visited, you will see these murals. These are very rarely organized. With very occasionally, the state has been forced to contribute to to the construction of these monuments, but most memorials are constructed by communities at their own initiative.
Granite Cross, just to me, were so impressive because, for example, we ran into a U.S. coffee merchant who, the people look so happy. They look so happy. And walking through the devastation from the last hurricane and the devastation from, and yet the people are hospitable, wonderful, seemingly just quite remarkable.
Well, that's good. Organizing people. They're people who have on the community you're in, but for example, in the Ishil region, there's some tremendous. They're very tough on. I mean, they fight for get what you want there, but they fight for land rights. They fight to in these giant hydroelectric projects and mining projects. It's not the Maya Ishil are not a passive people. Aspects of the Ishil that I think is incredibly and impressive about them.
So we just have a couple of more. So much time with us. We had planned a 10-minute interview, and we've stretched you to an hour for the NSA and the Rios Montt trial.
You know, it really is in legal limbo right now. And as a friend of mine so beautifully, the defense lawyers are now basically using the legal system to destroy justice. I mean, it's just ways to legally manipulate the justice system. So that, not an acquittal, of course, but they have achieved sort of a legal case, just a terrible, we're in a kind of a terrible legal, what can we do about it? I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not supporting the process and legal assistance, though many of my friends here in the U.S. and in Guatemala are. What we can do, I think, is that the genocide trial and all the people associated with testify, not just the many experts, but the incredible, courageous judges. We need to celebrate that trial, and despite the Constitutional Court's terrible, terrible decision, suspend, you know, annul the verdict and suspend that process. I was talking about how to publish the entire long sentence. It's about 714 pages.
Oh, wow. Huh.
And so we're looking at Editorial, a publishing house in Guatemala, and then support publish the verdicts, probably in parts, in volumes, and to see if we can raise some money to get free in the Ishil region so they can be used by educators there in the schools, in the documentation centers, and so forth. So, you know, there's everybody has their way strange moment that we're in, and that's one now.
Yeah, it's just an amazing continuing. Again, we're speaking with the National Security Archival about the right to truth, the right to information. And Kate, we just have you about two more minutes. In light is, especially, you know, in light of the very slow and torturous Guatemala and in Latin America, what gives you hope? What keeps you going?
Well, I will say first, relationship with and my collaboration with my partners in Guatemala, investigators, the human rights groups and the leaders of those groups, the organizers from the Ishil region who have been such an amazing part of this, part of what keeps all of this going, because everybody needs to go. So it's not new for any of us to be waiting for some outcome. And then on the other hand, in my sort of nerdy document going is I just love burying myself in an archive for days on old crumbling paper and reading through it and finding new information I never knew before.
In your purse.
Exactly, that too.
Kate Doyle, we thank you. You have been a splendid guest and stayed so much longer than much.
Oh, thank you, Leila and Carol. It was a pleasure.
All right. And again, Sleuth Stories. Check out the National Security Archive work in bringing secrets to light, bringing, getting truth out of a right to truth and right to information. Sunny, sunny Portland evening.
And we have one small announcement, but this is going to be my last show for a while. Decided to branch. And Carol?
And I'm taking the summer off and maybe Lobu. This is a radio station have a great evening.
And plains, but land to roam and cultivate, reciprocate to take, to respect the Indian way. I will miss gone like a memory that floats in the air. The sun climbing in the wind on a hot summer day.
As soon as they were ready for the blow, seeing turbulent skies above me, saw war in a mask and a costume, in a jungle of leaving hands in the wrong man. Will it always be just the same? So risk a life to wash a dish, see money disguised your only wish. So mother smiles so hopeful, seen me as a woman now able to choose. Found the strength that I need to serve the truth. What's your karma today? What's your karma today? The things you say, what they can you take? Truth, nothing but the truth. In the case, is it only me? Is it only you? Are we only living for
KBOO Portland. We were just listening to Bread and Roses. Coming up next, talking about a lot of interesting topics that have been currently happening. Keep it locked.
May the walls on the road be witness, and the words of your love be spoken at your table and when you part.
KBOO Community Radio, Reasoning Reggae Time, are proud to sponsor electro-dub artist Gazing Sound, June 7th at 9 p.m. at the Alhambra Theater. Tickets for this 21 and over show, tickets.com. $1 from each ticket sold goes to Gowdy with Indubious and Higher Reasoning Sound, 4811 Southeast Hawthorne in Portland.
Announce its 2013 official Pride schedule of events for June. Have a full week of exciting happenings designed to showcase and celebrate the LGBT, a Star Trek theme party, a special film screening, a comedy show, musical. The week will conclude with the 43rd annual Portland Pride, June 15th and 16th at Tom McCall Park. Festival and parade can be found at kboo.fm on the right hand of events.
K282BH Philomath. KB.
1, 2, 3.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
What's up, fam? You're tuned to Hard Knock Radio here on the Pacific. We discuss the upcoming June 9th rally for political prisoner. Later on in the program, we discuss the national.